This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We've seen an outcry from many African countries about this video that we've seen on CNN documenting alleged abuses and slavery auctions inside Libya. And now France has demanded an urgent UN Security Council session on human trafficking in Libya.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details of this story coming up. Also, former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace Mugabe have been granted immunity from prosecution as the country prepares to swear in a new president. A new privately funded museum of the Bible that just opened in Washington, D.C. is being called controversial by some. And here in the U.S., many Americans are celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace Mugabe have been granted immunity from prosecution. An official in the ruling ZANU-PF party and a Harare journalist confirmed the development to VOA Zimbabwe service today. Mugabe has been negotiating terms of his retirement with Zimbabwean generals and political leaders who forced him to step down Tuesday after 37 years in power. Mnangagwa returned to Zimbabwe yesterday after spending about 2 weeks in exile. The Speaker of Parliament says Mnangagwa will be sworn in as the country's new president tomorrow. Meantime, Mugabe's rule had the media gagged. Reporter Kuzazi Zvinavashi in Harare reflects on Mugabe's stance on the media and what media stakeholders want reviewed.
The wild cheers and car horns of Zimbabweans celebrating the end of Robert Mugabe's iron-fisted rule. After 37 years in power, the 93-year-old president resigned, giving into pressure from his party and Zimbabweans at large. Now the nation looks ahead. Wenzilesi Katuka is a young Zimbabwean and he is hopeful.
I think change begins in smaller steps. This is the first small step, but I think we'll get there sometime. This is the beginning of the future.
Mugabe's former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is set to take over as president. He is one of the figures who helped Mugabe maintain a firm grip on power. Ben Frith is one of the white farmers who was displaced under Mugabe's controversial land grab in 2000.
I think most of us are really worried about Mnangagwa taking over as president. He has been responsible for the deaths of many, many people in this country. And so we are worried that it will be more of the same if he is able to take over and if he cements his power in the same way that he has kept Mugabe in power all these years.
One Zimbabwean, Charity Chirandu, says she has faith in Mnangagwa's rule.
Under Mnangagwa, I think Zimbabwe will be a better country. Not because we're getting rid of the system or changing the constitution like tomorrow morning, but I'm sure most countries will be willing to invest in Zimbabwe.
Just before his resignation, Parliament had begun the formal process of ousting Mugabe. Thousands of people gathered at an impeachment party and many took turns sharing what they want to see for the country, as well as for Mugabe and his wife Grace. Gift Ostalos is the spokesperson of Tajamuka, a social movement that shut down the country last year while staging protests against government.
Robert Mugabe must be arrested. He must be arrested and face the crime that he committed. Grace Mugabe must be arrested. Today's young people were also calling for the immediate withdrawal of the PhD which was given to Grace Mugabe.
Many people say they want Mugabe arrested, hoping it will bring closure to Zimbabwe. Frith explains some of the things Mugabe has done.
for there to be justice in terms of all the millions of dollars that he has stolen over the years, returned to the country. Ultimately, he should be tried for crimes against humanity. The terrible things that he has done over all these years constitute crimes against humanity, and he should be tried for the suffering that he's caused, because otherwise, if he is not, the world is setting a precedent for dictators to carry on likewise.
Many people are conflicted about Mugabe going to court. Some say his wife should also be tried, while others say he should go into exile. It is unclear if Mugabe had agreed to conditions for his resignation with the military and the ZANU-PF leaders, nor is it clear for how Mnangagwa will rule. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe in Harare.
The African Union condemns the abuses of migrants in Libya and calls for a stop to torture and slavery as France is seeking an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council to discuss the alleged sale of African migrants as slaves. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the international call to stop the abuse of migrants.
Yes, we've seen an outcry from many African countries about this video that we've seen on CNN documenting alleged abuses and slavery auctions inside Libya. And now France has demanded an urgent UN Security Council session on human trafficking in Libya because the French President Emmanuel Macron is concerned about human rights abuses and human trafficking there. So pressure is growing for greater action. This pressure from African countries who are also outraged by the torture and the violence that we've heard about coming out of Libya. These are huge issues in this area and of concern both to the European Union and to African countries.
Also, I understand that Libya has repatriated migrants going back to Cameroon.
Yes, this is an operation that is being conducted by the International Organization for Migration, which is a UN, and we've seen thousands of migrants repatriated from Libya, many from Nigeria. In the last couple of years, more than 10,000, and thousands this year. They're going back at the rate of around 500 a week in this major operation, and Italian media have been reporting that 250 migrants in the latest operation were repatriated from Libya to Cameroon through this particular service. And many of them have spoken about the living hell that they experienced in Libya. One migrant said, "I would not advise my worst enemy to go there. The conditions are just so bad in these holding centres that are being run, often run by local militias who are perpetrating violence, torture and other abuses there."
Also, the UNHCR has a new report out regarding migrants. What does that report tell us?
Well, the UN Refugee Agency has produced an interesting report showing that migrants and refugees are choosing different ways to reach Europe. The director of the European Bureau, Pascal Moreau, said that over the past few months, the sea route to Greece is becoming more popular as we've seen the arrivals to Italy diminish. So they're looking for new ways to reach Europe. The number of crossings from Libya to Italy has dropped, with some 21,700 people arriving by sea between July and September. That is the lowest number that we've seen in Italy for the same period in the last 4 years. So an increased number of those arriving in Italy are departing from Tunisia, Turkey and Algeria. And the top three nationalities arriving in Europe via the Mediterranean routes are Moroccan, Nigerian and Syrian. But we're certainly seeing an increase in the number of arrivals in Greece. So some changes there, and the European Union is also keen to invest more resources to close the migrant corridors in the central Mediterranean and create greater stability. So it'll be interesting to see if more funds are allocated to countries like Libya, Tunisia, Algeria, Niger, Chad and Mali, which is what the president of the European Parliament, Antonio Tajani, was proposing today.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. The world's best-selling book is the Bible, but the Holy Manuscript has been interpreted in different ways by different religions. In Washington, the new privately funded Museum of the Bible opened to the public last Saturday. Located near the U.S. Capitol, the $500 million museum features ancient artifacts, interactive displays, and Bibles from over the centuries. But as we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, the museum is also controversial.
Not surprisingly, the Museum of the Bible contains many different Bibles, and there are songs about the Bible, stories from Hebrew texts like the Dead Sea Scrolls, even contemporary fashions with biblical themes. For a museum founded by a conservative evangelical Christian, there is surprisingly little about Jesus. Tony Zeiss, the museum's executive director, says the focus is on the Bible because its teachings help people navigate through life.
Lessons to be learned there. So we're concentrating on its history, its narrative, and its impact. We would like for them to personally commit to becoming more engaged in this amazing book.
He says the museum is non-sectarian, and more than 100 scholars, representing various religious points of view, designed the exhibits, which fill several floors in the large building. There are colorful, state-of-the-art interactive displays.
Yet your souls and hearts are in heaven.
To both educate people and keep them entertained, even in the elevators. And they can also stroll through a recreation of Nazareth, the town where Jesus grew up, amid hand-painted trees and the sound of birds singing. Seth Pollinger is the museum's director of content.
It's meant to create a setting where when you walk in, you feel like you're in a different place, a different world in the sense, you know, that you would find 2,000 years ago.
The museum was founded by Steve Green, a conservative evangelical Christian who has spent years spreading the story of the Bible. It contains impressive ancient artifacts, some on loan from outside the U.S., others from the Green family's massive collection of antiquities. Some of those, it turns out, were smuggled out of Iraq and purchased by the family, who said they didn't know they had received stolen items. The Greens forfeited them and paid a $3 million fine. Green says the museum is willing to return artifacts to their home countries.
If there's any artifact that we have that they would have a claim, that's fine.
Green is president of Hobby Lobby, founded by his father, the world's largest privately owned arts and crafts retailer. In 2014, citing religious objections, the company won a Supreme Court case to deny contraception coverage to workers at family-owned corporations.
It would be hard for us as a family to try to hide what we believe. We believe this book is what it claims to be. But our role here is to present the facts of the Bible, more of it in a journalistic look.
But that's questionable, says John Fia, a liberal evangelical Christian who is the chair of the history department at Messiah College in Pennsylvania.
As much as they want to try to stay neutral, an objective take on the Bible, it's going to be very, very hard to present the Bible in that way because the Bible is always so sort of ensconced, so connected to a particular religious tradition and their way of interpreting it.
Georgetown University professor Jacques Berlinerbrau, who is Jewish, believes the museum has a hidden agenda. He directs the Program for Jewish Civilization at Georgetown University in Washington.
The idea that the museum doesn't have any intent to convert people to a particular reading of God, of Jesus Christ, of the Scripture, is absurd.
And Fia sees a hidden agenda in the decision to place the museum in the nation's capital.
It's hard to see this as anything other than an attempt to try to bring Christian values and the Bible's teachings as understood by evangelical Protestants like the Greens into the center of American political life and American cultural life.
Museum officials welcome the skepticism and are encouraging people to come to the museum and decide what they think for themselves. Deborah Block, VOA News.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight Live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 20 Minutes Past the Hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace Mugabe have been granted immunity from prosecution as the country prepares to swear in a new president. And a newly privately funded Museum of the Bible that just opened in Washington, D.C. is being called controversial by some. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Today is the American holiday of Thanksgiving, and the annual pardoning of the White House turkeys each year by American presidents is an interesting tradition leading up to the holiday. It is said that President Abraham Lincoln's clemency for a turkey was the origin for the pardoning ceremony that is now so well publicized. VOA's Nicoletta Eilish reports on this American tradition.
There are a lot of stories about the beginning of turkey pardoning for Thanksgiving, says the chief historian of the White House Historical Association, Edward Langell. Some of them, he says, date back to Abraham Lincoln during America's Civil War.
He had a son named Tad who joked with Abraham Lincoln about this pet turkey that he had who was strolling around the voting booths in 1864, and Abraham Lincoln asked him, why is he strutting around? Is he here to vote?
And Ted answered that his turkey could not vote because he was too young.
Therefore, Abraham Lincoln pardoned this turkey and forgave him from the possibility of being killed for the Thanksgiving table.
When Harry Truman was president in the 1940s, he began letting the Thanksgiving turkey go free. Almost 20 years later, in a well-documented occasion, President John F. Kennedy decided to spare a turkey brought to the White House for the Thanksgiving table. Kennedy said, "No, I think I'll pardon this turkey and let it grow."
We know that John F. Kennedy definitely began this tradition and has continued on and off ever since.
Today, the White House gets its turkeys with help from the National Turkey Federation.
There's been an official White House turkey reception ceremony, really since Harry Truman was the first to have a public ceremony.
The procured turkeys are pardoned and often sent to a petting zoo in the vicinity. But the turkey cooked for the president's meal is bought with his own money and prepared according to his taste and that of his family. Nicoletta Ilich, VOA, Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Nicoletta. Well, Thanksgiving Day in the United States is a day set aside for family feasting and expressions of gratitude for all the prosperity and goodness in our lives. VOA's Adam Phillips took to the streets of New York to ask people what it is they are thankful for on this Thanksgiving Day.
It's a brisk and sunny afternoon in Manhattan's Morningside Heights neighborhood, and 5-year-old Ariana is clear about what she'll be grateful for this Thanksgiving Day.
I'm grateful for my teachers and all the things in the world that are, like, excellent. School is one, my family, my food, like, everything that's really important.
Are you happy for friends, too?
Well, yes, I am, because friends are a part of important things.
At a nearby cafe, Columbia University student Kate Anthony echoes Ariana's thoughts.
I'm really grateful for my friends. I just moved and started a new graduate program, and I think I'm grateful both for the new friends that I've made who have become so close so fast, and also for the friends who helped me figure out that going to school was the right thing to do. I'm grateful for my community.
Ioana Manoladaki is a Greek set and costume designer who's visiting her family in New York for the holiday. She paints gratitude in even broader strokes.
I'm grateful for my whole life, for the love I have received all through, for my excellent family, and my power to create good things to make people happy. I'm grateful for my teachers who taught me a lot, and my students who also taught me a lot. And I'm grateful for being able to understand people and forgive. And this, I think, is the essence of true freedom and happiness.
What is the relationship between gratitude and blessing?
You cannot separate one from the other. I mean, I always feel that my gratitude gives me back a blessing.
Outside the Beacon Theater, Joe DiCapua would be grateful to be blessed with a last-minute ticket to the Bob Dylan concert that's about to start. He takes a moment to share some seasonal thoughts. So what are you grateful for at this moment?
My health, the weather, something to eat, a place to stay. Things are pretty calm right now.
You're grateful for those things, huh?
Yeah. And I'm grateful for Bob Dylan, absolutely, that I was born at a time that he's alive too. And that comes from the heart.
Miriam Winicore knows all about the heart this Thanksgiving.
Specifically, I'm having a little love affair at the moment, which is very enjoyable. And that's making me joyful and grateful and thankful. To tell you the truth, I'm 70 and he's 63. So I feel like, oh, I'm robbing the cradle. And then in general, I'm thankful that I have more than many other people do. And I'm concerned about others who don't.
Michael Richards is a homeless man who recently moved to New York. One might assume that he has little to be thankful for. But
I'm grateful that I still have another day to make things better, to keep going strong and keep pushing on and trying to survive. That's what I'm grateful for, that the Lord has given me another day each day. Even though my situation is not the best situation and I have no place to stay, I still know that I'm blessed.
Rich Orloff is thankful for a career that feeds both body and soul.
I write plays, and I've been writing plays for about 30 years, and I just feel enormously lucky and grateful that I've had the chance to follow my dream. I'm aware of how many people don't get to do that. To me, gratitude is the opposite of taking things for granted. So whether it's my health, my friends, or even, I think ultimately life itself, I want to appreciate it. I want to recognize how extraordinary these gifts are.
And it may be that thankfulness pays back better. As one man put it, expressing gratitude is guaranteed to make that roast turkey taste even better. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.